Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are actually profiling a business, something that we haven't done in some time. You'll remember back in the day that we've had startups like Pickup together with Naked Insurance, for example. So we really want to talk to some of the people that are taking a risk out there, you know, trying to solve some of the problems in our society or out there in the world, and perhaps create some business models around it that will be helpful. Now, given the current COVID-19 crisis in and around the world, there is an interesting initiative slash business that's coming online. My understanding is that they recently just launched, like we're talking last week into this week, sort of launch, and we are joined on the line by one of the co-founders of Covi ID, that is a Kopiegio, and he's also a UCT professor, head of the master's program for financial technology at the University. Prof, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm all right. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. I think just as a good, as a point of departure, what is Covi ID and what is the overarching vision that you are trying to go after at the moment?
Covi ID is a free, open source, privacy-preserving COVID-19 immunity pass. And what we are trying to achieve are two things. In the short term, we are trying to help the country get out of this strict nationwide lockdown and move into a smart lockdown scenario where we still have strict social distancing rules and we still might have to shut down parts of the country or parts of the economy, but not the entire country as a whole, because people are hurting and we need to make sure that we can go back to work as quickly as possible. Or what is a great recession already will just turn into something much worse. And what we can contribute to that is our application implements an immunity pass. So what this means is it's an application that you can use either on your smartphone or just by having a QR code that we or one of the partners that we're working with can print for you. And with that QR code, you can receive health credentials. These health credentials can be your COVID-19 health status if you've done a test and you've tested positive, but by now you have recovered, you pose a much lower risk to society than somebody who hasn't recovered or who hasn't contracted the virus yet. So as a consequence, those who have recovered, they will play a very important role as we restart the economy, because they are the people that can move about freely, that can make sure that business go on, that schools go on, that essential services go on. So we give them the ability to prove that status through this QR code. And we also have an application for verifiers. So these are security guards or teachers or really anybody who's tasked with safeguarding public health. And they can scan the QR code of users and then get a green, amber, red status, whether or not, what the health status is. So if you are amber, which is the default, like yellow, everybody starts off on the amber status. Means sort of normal restrictions apply. At the moment, it's a nationwide lockdown, but this is not sustainable. Either way, we have to loosen this up eventually, sooner, hopefully, rather than later. So that's the default. But as more and more people recover, they can get the green status so that when we have stricter restrictions in the future, you can, for example, take a taxi and fill it up to capacity as opposed to only having seven passengers in your taxi. Or if you have a company and you want to verify that you don't put your employees at risk, you can implement strict social distancing and then sort of increase the number of people that you can let into your buildings by admitting those who have the green status. And if you have the red status, it means you're currently contagious, you need to go home, self-isolate. You should never see a red status when you verify someone's COVID ID. So that's the idea in the short term. In the longer term, what we really are doing is we provide digital identity to South Africans. And that is a key missing piece, linking together many services in the financial industry, but also just many new economy services that are coming together. So by providing this functionality even for users who don't have a phone or don't have a smartphone or don't know how to use the smartphone, which really is a very large part of the population that only use their Facebook or their WhatsApp but have no experience using banking or any other kind of apps. By simplifying all this into a QR code that you can hold with what we call a data custodian, somebody that you trust with your personal data, you simplify this digital identity functionality and make it accessible literally to everybody. So what this can do is it can rapidly scale, not just across South Africa, but we hope that we can provide this service all across Africa, creating 1 billion digital identities for all Africans to receive their health status verification, first for COVID-19, but ultimately also for HIV, AIDS, TB, and even your medical histories. It will allow a very flexible integration into a new digital economy, and it is another opportunity for Africa to leapfrog. We don't have to build the same kind of old systems that Europe has, but because we use blockchain as a foundation for what we build, we can really create a new kind of digital infrastructure for identity in Africa.
Has this immunity tagging system or something similar been done anywhere else in the world?
China has a similar system in terms of functionality. So as China came out of their lockdown, which was really harsh, it was even harsher than ours. You had webcams installed in front of your apartment if you tested positive, so that the government would monitor that you don't leave your apartment. It was very privacy invasive. So in the Chinese system, the government has full control over all your data. They created a centralized database that stores your personal information, your healthcare data, literally everything about you, and it's part of this larger Chinese social scoring system. We think this is a very bad idea, not just because the government should not have that kind of power. Our government, you know, I might be able to trust our government with that, but even there, I would be concerned for some parts of our government. But in general, it's a bad idea, because these large closed systems, they don't enable innovation. One way to think about this is what the Chinese have built is basically a walled garden, something like Facebook, that creates a closed ecosystem where whoever controls it really decides what kind of innovation goes into it, so what happens within it. What we are building is something more like the internet, which is an open system where new actors can enter without paying sort of fees or without being restricted by the whoever controls the system. We create this open platform where we define standards for identity and implement them, but we really provide a free implementation of sort of this custodial wallet, this application where you can create user accounts, you can become a trusted custodian for user data, so that when banks and other financial institutions want to sort of offer identity services going forward, which I think will be a very important part of their business model in the future, they can do so because we provide them with the functionality for free. And as this sort of scales and as more and more users join the system, you have this massive marketplace for innovations around identity and innovations in the healthcare space. And that is a very powerful proposition, because we never had sort of this platform where innovation in healthcare in Africa could really be brought to the masses without restrictions by only including those who have smartphones. And I think that is sort of the better way to implement this than the Chinese centralized way. But there's also other countries like the UK, Europe, including Germany, they are thinking about issuing an immunity pass. Many states in the US are thinking about it simply because it just gives you this little bit of extra, you know, functionality to reopen your economy gradually without endangering people. And that's really the balance we need to strike at the moment. How much can we sort of return to, I don't want to say a normal life, but a more normal life? And how much do we need to adhere to the restrictions and the lockdown that we currently have? And with such a functionality, you can actually, with a COVID ID functionality and an immunity pass, you can fine-tune this much better than simply sending everybody into lockdown whenever the number of cases in the country is too high.
Prof, I just want to perhaps pick your brain on the long-term consequences of putting such a system into place, because in some ways it does paint this sort of dystopian ideal for a world where whether it's a centralized government system like in China or a decentralized, maybe open source sort of system like the one that you are proposing, where in one way or another there is some authority somewhere that sort of is able to know and track people, individuals, know their health status, perhaps even, location data, that sort of thing. How does that feed into, I guess, the privacy debate, especially when you just consider, like you said, that in China it's been taken to the extreme, but it seems that to some lesser extent that the way that they've been able to go about it is sort of spurring, some of these ideas.
Yeah, what we are taking is the exact opposite approach. In our system, we sort of as CoVID, as the organization building it, we don't have any data. We don't have your data unless we act as a data custodian and you want to keep your data with us. But our ideology, our philosophy of how we build this is that the users need to be in full control of their data. And blockchain actually allows us to do that. It gives us this little bit of extra functionality where we can commit to not having the user data. So in our system, because it is decentralized, if you have a smartphone, your health data, all your personal information, everything will stay on your phone and with you only. So unless you grant somebody access to read that information by showing your QR code or showing your app, nobody, not even us, we can read your data. So we can't do anything with it. We don't see it. We pass it from the medical professionals or from whoever issues the credential of your health status directly into your wallet, either in your phone or if you have it with a custodian. Like think about banks becoming data custodians that keep your data safe because they are well regulated. I wouldn't go so far to say you can trust them, but as far as established sort of organizations go, you can trust our banks. They keep your data safe on your behalf. It's not us as a company, which is the exact opposite of how China has done it and how Facebook is doing it. Facebook, Google, Amazon, what these companies do is they take your data, they store it on their servers, they monetize it, they get incredibly rich in the process. But the users get nothing of it, or maybe a free service, but not compensated for the true value of the data. Our system is fundamentally different because we put the data in the hands of the users. We give them the ability to control, to monetize, to use it as they see fit. So what we do, in essence, is we create digital property rights and we place them in the hand of those where we think it belongs, and that's the users. So we try very hard in our entire business to not be able to sort of control the kind of data that is stored in the system on the users' phones, or interfere in any other way. That's exactly how the internet was built. It was created by a couple of academics sort of interested in the free exchange of information, and they defined a couple of standards and they built some infrastructure around it. And that is exactly what we are doing as well.
And then I guess in terms of scaling it, it's one of the things that you mentioned just now, that there are plans to scale and that you do see such a system having enough legs to actually be taken up by more than just South Africa. In terms of getting to that stage, what type of business model are you hoping to put in place to get to that place where you can actually then scale the business?
So there are two parts of what we do. One is a nonprofit part, which creates the open source software for a custodial wallet so that whoever wants to become an identity provider can do so. We give you the means. You can just download it from our website, you can spin it up in the cloud, and you can become an identity provider. If you're a bank or an insurance company, it makes it very easy for you to start providing identity services to your customers. That's the nonprofit part. There's a for-profit part that we have where we provide tailored solutions to those who spin up these custodial wallets. So we provide services to make it easier for them, to give them a turnkey solution as opposed to just giving them the code. The free and free software does not come from free beer, but from free speech. And that is exactly the model that we are following. So it's this sort of providing services over and above just making it open source and selling those to data custodians that will get us initially going. In the longer run, by becoming a data custodian, we create digital property rights. And I think the way to think about this is data is one of the largest and fastest growing resources we have in our economy. Over 90% of the world's data have been created in the past 2 or 3 years. That number has stayed true for the past 30 years. What this means is that in 2 or 3 years, 90% of the data that will be available then doesn't even exist today. What we do is we help people create ownership of their data. And if you create ownership and property rights, people can trade their data. So the way that we see this in the longer run, aside from the sort of additional solution provider services that we offer to customers, we will become a data marketplace that intermediates the largest growing resource in the world. And we will, just as any exchange, start charging a small intermediation fee for that. But that is a few years out. The immediate focus for us is to provide a service that is valuable now in order to get as many people as possible onto the platform, get them the immunity pass, make sure that they can go back to work. And we offer these custodial wallets to everybody for free so that banks can come and they can start marketing their identity services to their own customers and sort of bind them to their brand. And 6 months from now, they can come and they can offer new apps, you know, new platforms, new services around this initial identity that they created, and then really use that to make a profit. So this, we think, will create enough critical mass on the number of users. And on the verifier side, we are working with large companies already that want to try this for their own business. Think about banks. When you enter a bank branch, can you show to your employees as a bank that you don't put them in sort of inordinate amount of risk? So you check the health status of people coming in. And if somebody comes in with a yellow status, he has to adhere to social distancing. And if he comes in with a green status, everything is a bit more relaxed. So you make it easier for people to return to work. And for taxis, there's a very clear benefit. If you have only people with green status in your taxi, you can load it full without endangering anybody. So it makes it possible just to spin up the economy a little faster than we would otherwise. And we think that this will drive the adoption on the verifier side.
In your modeling and projections, which I'm sure you've probably done quite extensively, for South Africa, in terms of just this initial phase of getting people to go back to work and having, amber, green and red statuses, that sort of thing. What's a good number that you guys are perhaps aiming for, at which point you'll say that you now have critical mass in South Africa?
I think I think our total number that we're aiming for is 58 million. Literally everybody should have digital identity, whether they want to use it for verification of their COVID status, or if they want to use it to verify sort of essential worker status or whatever kind of credential. Think about educational credentials, all the credentials that have been issued to you, you should be able to control it digitally as you do physically. So we think the value is literally for everybody. This is in these two-sided market models, there isn't really a middle ground. Like, it's not a situation where you can say, oh, if we have 1 million users, which would be for any other business, would be fantastic. Right, but it's not where you can say with 1 million users we have achieved success. So our strategy is to go all in. We have raised the funding that we need already from grants to go to market, and we are working very hard so that the government sees the wisdom in having a free and open source immunity pass included in the national response, so that we do indeed plan to literally get every single South African, and afterwards every single person in Africa, a digital identity.
How much have you guys been able to get in terms of funding, in terms of capital raising, and where have you sort of sourced the funds from?
So we haven't raised funding in the traditional sense. We got 2 million rand from a foundation just to support the open source initiative, and that gets us to market. We are about a month old and we have a working prototype. We have about 130 people in the organization, many of them as volunteers, because we are actually very active privacy advocates and fight for privacy in all things. We have a couple of full-time employees that are full-time people working with us that that help us sort of to reach the next stage. And the next round of fundraising we'll do that will get us to scale. But at the moment, we are fully financed for the next couple of months to go to market and to achieve our goals. So also, if you are working in this sort of space where you have a nonprofit and a for-profit component, you can raise grant money for the nonprofit and do the actual open source build, and then raise traditional venture capital funding for the for-profit part in order to sort of make sure you're sustainable. At the moment, we are only focused on going to market. And we think we are worldwide actually among the very first. So we had many discussions in the past couple of days, in the past week, with international organizations that are building enterprise solutions for COVID-19 digital response, that are really looking for a privacy-preserving immunity pass. So there aren't a lot of companies internationally out there that are as far as we are. And we are very proud of that, to put South Africa on the map globally, to say, you know, this is innovation made in Africa, made possible because we have received great support by the Department of Science and Industry and by the CSIR and the South African National Blockchain Alliance. So because of that, we were able to actually execute very, very quickly and go to market as quick as we have.
In terms of that go-to-market strategy, how far are you guys along that, and when can, I guess, listeners expect to start being able to register all of that?
Well, we have a first version that is out there already that we are now testing, and we have planned a second round of testing and especially stress testing with a large company, which would get us about 10,000 users for this test. And we hope to have that done by the end of lockdown, which hopefully, knock on wood, is in 2 weeks. So by 30 April, we plan to be fully ready, available on the market. We have an app that is on the App Store already, or should be there any day now. And we'll launch the custodial wallet by 30 April as well. So that's when people should expect to see us. This week we have planned a campaign to just make people more aware, not just so much about us as a company. That's fine, but it's really about, you don't have to invade people's privacy in order to give you the functionality that you need to fight this virus. You can actually use modern technology, leapfrog over the existing systems, and build a more efficient, open, transparent infrastructure that will enable innovation. And that's really the message that we are trying to get out now.
Did you come up with the COVID-ID in response to COVID-19, or was it something that you had already started working on previously that sort of gained impetus because of the coronavirus pandemic?
So because we have launched this FinTech Masters program 3 years ago and has been incredibly successful. We are really blessed with the students we get. It's absolutely a privilege to be teaching this. The goal of this program has always been to start companies. And it's always around the issue of sort of how can blockchain help create digital property rights? How can you sort of do credential issuance through blockchain? And because of that, we had a previous company that we started called Registry, which does credentials in the educational space, which recently got funding from UCT through the SASME fund. But because we had that, we have worked with a large banking partner and with a development studio that also helped us for COVID-ID around educational credentials. So a lot of the code and, you know, a lot of the design that you need, we had already thought through over the past 6 months. And we just launched COVID-ID sort of newly and separately from that, because the health space sort of is different, and it's so important to have a product ready to go to market now, because people can't wait 6 weeks or 8 weeks before we end this lockdown. It needs to happen now.
It definitely sounds like quite a good idea, and especially as the government is contemplating trying to decide whether or not the lockdown should end come next week. Prof, how can people perhaps get in touch with you if they want to engage, perhaps work with you, perhaps even fund you guys? How can they engage with you?
So the easiest way to engage with us is to go to our website covid.me. That's covid.me. Just go to the website. There's an email list where you can enter yourself to get updates, sort of just to keep in touch with what we've been up to. We are on social media. You can also send us an email at info@covid.me just to get in touch, especially if you're interested in supporting our cause for to protect privacy. But also we're very actively looking for companies interested in rolling out this immunity pass with their employees in order to sort of provide the best possible protection for their employees. And we are always keen on engaging with medical practitioners to sort of help us in our understanding. We are entrepreneurs. We have a medical practitioner sort of as part of our team, but we're always keen to have sort of more engagement in that space to make sure that we are up to date with the latest research. What are the decisions that we have to face about how do you get from one status to the other? These are really like more ethical considerations than technical. So that is something where we're always keen to engage. And then we are really hoping that government gets on board to fully. And we are championed by the Department of Science and Industry, but what we are really hoping for is that we will be included in the official response from the South African government to the COVID-19 crisis, where there will be a recommendation to issue an immunity pass fully controlled by the government. You know, we are happy to work in any way, shape, or form with the Department of Health or the NICD. So that we can make sure that the credential issuance is as seamless as possible, and is in line with guidance and regulations issued by the government. And the quicker we can get that done, the faster we can move into other African countries. We've started with 9 African countries that we have identified in our team, where we started making connections, started connecting with organizations like the UNDP or the World Bank, around sort of launching this platform in a broader African context. We have engaged with various organizations in the US and Europe around integrating with them. What we really need is the government to come to the party and understand that sort of there is an alternative to a harsh lockdown, and we can be smart about it, and we can gradually reopen the economy without endangering people. And I think this is what we need, because otherwise we will face 6 to 12 more months of this until we have a vaccine, and that is simply not an acceptable. That's not a sustainable situation.
Okay, so that's been us with Kopier Guillaume, who is the co-founder and of COVID, which is offering an immunity pass for people that have or might have recovered from COVID-19. He is also a UCT professor and head of the master's program for financial technology at the university. He was just telling us about COVID. He's saying that it's pro they're offering a good way for people to go back to work or to actually start engaging in public again, just as long as their statuses are verified. But beyond that, he's also just talking about the fact that they envision a future where they actually give a digital identity to people in South Africa and on the rest of the continent. They've identified about 9 African countries so far that they would want to move into, and they're targeting the whole South African population of 58 million people, and are hoping that their solution will be part of the official COVID-19, I guess, effort or response as recommended by the government. government. So it's been a very fascinating discussion. I think it would be a good one to watch, especially going forward, and especially if it's something that's going to help people to actually progress and do something apart from staying home. There's nothing wrong with working from home at the moment, but for those people who don't have the luxury of working from home, for example, if they can get back to work or go back to earning an income in one way or another, that will be a good thing. Prof, I forgot to ask just now, are you guys hiring? Because you said you're looking for companies to work with. You're also looking for medical professionals and the like. But for people that are listening that may be saying, I also want to contribute to the actual business, are you guys hiring?
Yes, we are hiring. We've hired the first couple of people already, and we are continuously looking to expand. Our goal is to grow faster than the virus. It's quite simple. So yes, if you are in that space and you have experience and you are interested, just give us a shout. We will be in touch. We have the organizational sort of structure in place to grow and execute as we've planned, and we will need any help we can get to reach that goal.
Okay, so you heard it right there. He is saying that they want to grow faster than the virus is growing.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
At this point, anything that's going to help people to get back to work or to at least become more economically productive is a good thing, in my view. Very good and a very interesting initiative that they are taking. As I said during the discussion, it's just an interesting thing to see how people are using technology as ways to sort of do the tracking and the tracing and tracing and also just keeping up with people's statuses, which is what COVID-ID is, one of the things that they are trying to do. And it's just interesting as well, and somewhat ironic that some of the policies that countries like China have been called out for, you know, such as this intense surveillance of the populations, etc., are some of the ways in which they've been able to effectively track, trace, and keep people at home and social distance and the like. But to a lesser extent, I do agree. But obviously, this implementation, like what the professor said, is to a much lesser extent. So some of the concerns do definitely sound like they'll be minimized somewhat. And you do hear from what he's saying that they've taken quite a lot of care to think about it in a different way, just so that it doesn't become this dystopian Big Brother state. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live, that is under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're hashtag BD Spotlight. You can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning. We'll be right back.